Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. This does not fall into the category of good news for a man like Daryl Forte, Kansas City's police chief. Kansas City was just ranked as one of the nation's top 10 most dangerous cities over 200,000. The chief these days is also focused on another concern, and that's one that doesn't usually get much attention, and that's caring for the members of his own force. Chief Daryl Forte is in the house, and Chief, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Good morning, sir.
You are focusing on caring for the members of your own force these days, and as I just said, that doesn't usually get a whole lot of attention. But on your blog, you just wrote about a man, one of your officers named Adam Baker. What did you write about him, and why is he a concern of yours right now?
It's about Save a Warrior program. He's one of our members who participated in that program. It's a program that was established years ago by an outside agency, and they approached me, and they basically said they've had probably 30 or 40 people go through this program, and most of those people had contemplated suicide before they participated in this
program. Because they had been involved in some kind of violent incident prior to going into the program, right?
Yes, and they were either in law enforcement and or military service, and they'd involved in some critical incidents, and they really just post-traumatic stress disorder basically is what they were suffering from what I was told. And every one of those participants came out with a different attitude. And when I was approached about this program, I immediately said, this is something we need to get involved in.
I gather that Officer Adam Baker came out a better man for having gone through it, too, it sounds like.
Yes, we had three participants, and Adam was open about sharing what he had learned in that program.
You know, our police departments across the country are a little slow to acknowledge the possibility of PTSD in its own force after a violent incident like a shooting or whatever. Here we are talking about this in 2015, and PTSD has been a concern for a number of years, at least when it comes to the military.
Yes, I think we've been slow to really pay attention to that, even Kansas City Police Department, because oftentimes we see a change in behavior when someone's involved in a critical incident. We recognize that change, but this is the process you go through. You witness or you actually directly involved in a critical incident. You go to get evaluated, and they, you know, our providers say, okay, you're ready to come back to work. But there's a lot more after that, and that's what we want to pay attention to. And it's not just post-traumatic stress disorder we're going to pay attention to. We're going to pay attention to people having marital problems, financial problems, and things like that, because we come to work every day, every single day, and we try to help other people with their problems. But then we have to remember we have to deal with what we have to deal with when we go home. So we want to make sure everybody's okay. We had a philosophy before where we really didn't take people by the hand in law enforcement. You get paid, you come do a job, and that's what you do. Now we're saying we're going to take you by the hand. If you're going through something, death, illness, or whatever it is, we're going to take you by the hand and make sure you're okay.
It's tricky, though, isn't it? Because as a guy who's covered your department back in the 80s and early 90s, you know, I can only imagine so many of your officers, when they're asked how they're feeling a few days after a tough incident, they're going to say, hey, I'm doing fine, I'm ready to go, when in fact, they're not.
That's right, and that's why we're going to take it out of their hands. We know already they're not doing okay, so we're going to have a regular follow-up period. They don't have to come to us. We're going to reach out to them.
So what is the protocol in the department when an officer is involved in a violent incident? What happens?
They're depending on the incident, they're immediately put on administrative leave, say officer-involved shooting or witness to something like that. And within several days or so, they go see our psychologist, the department, a contracted psychologist, and they're cleared or not cleared. And then when they're cleared, they come back to work. And unless they reach out, there's probably not any more follow-up.
Well, homicides, different topic altogether. The homicide count, people always want to know where the city is with that. The count as of yesterday was 32 compared to 29 as of a year ago, roughly similar. What do you make of it?
It's really, you know, you can't really go by numbers, and I say this over and over.
Yeah.
One is too many, but we're still on course to be under 100, which is not anything to brag about, because you know you want to be under 50 or 25. I mean, there's no magic number that you want to be under, because
79 I think,
and that's the lowest in over four decades. So again, we're continually tweaking what we do, and again, it's bigger than the police department. We often respond after the fact. When you talk about KC NOVA, the program that the mayor supports, city council,
this is the No Violence Alliance that we've talked about here on the show.
Yes, that's making the difference, because if you look at drug and gang related and network related homicides, they're way down. But my primary concern today is we've had 7 domestic violence related homicides, and that's huge when you talk about 2 compared to this time last year and 1 in 2013. So that's a problem, and again, it's bigger than a police problem. It's bigger than the police problem. So if anybody's out there and you need help, and I talked about this number yesterday. I shared this number yesterday, but the National Domestic Violence Network, 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. Call that number. You can develop a safety plan, and that'll tell you, because you're emotionally charged when something's happening to you. You look at that plan, and it'll help you get through some things. But again, get some help. And those of us that know someone that's going through something, encourage them. Don't be judgmental, but encourage them to get some help and be there for them.
Kansas City Police Chief Daryl Forte is my guest. As you just mentioned, Chief, we've had seven so far this year of domestic violence-related homicides compared to two last year. Any sense of what's going on out there? I know it's not a high number, but what's going on out there?
You know, it's a lack of self-control in most of these homicides, not just domestic violence-related homicides, but lack of self-control. And it's not just about unemployment or underemployment. I hear that all the time. I know so many people a lot older than me that grew up with nothing, and they don't have the tendency to go out and hurt somebody. So it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than, you know, and jobs a problem. You know, unemployment and underemployment is a problem around the nation. But that doesn't make people kill, and that shouldn't give people an excuse, and we shouldn't give them that to use as an excuse because they don't have jobs. And they're not killing to pay the rent. You know, they're not killing to pay the rent. They're killing because they're mad about something.
I mean, Chief, as a department, how do you combat something like, domestic violence-related homicides, which, of course, so often take place behind closed doors, out of sight, out of mind? Yeah.
And again, it's much bigger than us. We encourage people. Mm-hmm. We give the information out to seek resources when we know there's a problem there. Because domestic violence, it just doesn't happen overnight, and the person just doesn't get violent for the most part after one incident. You can see these things. They want power. They want control. They keep you from your friends. They keep you away from the finances. They talk to you badly. There's so many signs that, you know, that can indicate somebody, you know, has a tendency or might have a tendency to do something to you if they don't agree with you.
Yeah. You know, I want to go back to the homicide count. Again, last year we wound up with 79. You said it's the lowest. And how much for the department to come in with a lower number this year compared to last?
You know, like I tell our staff, you know, we're not trying to shoot for a certain number. Let's do everything we can to impact. And if somebody does commit a homicide, let's have those relationships out there where we can get that person off the street so they don't commit any more homicides.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the No Violence Alliance, and part of the idea behind that program is to talk to people, communicate ahead of time, find out what's going on in the streets so that you can ward off problems down the road. What have you done in recent months to tweak that program to make it even better than it was a year ago?
Well, you know, we haven't done a whole lot to tweak it because it worked last year. Yeah. We're not going to just move things to move things. But I think continue to build those relationships. When you have trust out there, people will call you before there's an incident. And I said this over and over my entire career, not just since I became chief, but we didn't have over 100 homicides until after the race riots in 1968. And that told me, you know, when I was in homicide in 1993, 94 as a sergeant, when I started looking at stats, it told me people really disconnected from the police because they started handling their own problems. When you look at Rodney King, 91, 92, 93, we peaked with the highest number of homicides at 153, roughly, in 1993. Mm-hmm. 1992, we had 152. That's when people disengaged with the police department. Those are little things like that. And for the numbers to be like they are now, with all the civil unrest around the country, I think we're doing an okay job. We're not doing good. But the numbers didn't spike like they did in other times where there's been civil unrest around the country.
Well, you are determined as chief. In fact, you've referred to your job as something of a ministry. You're out there trying to communicate, trying to break down barriers and get people talking between your department and people who are on the streets. How often are you on the streets yourself, just cruising around on your motorcycle, people?
I was out there yesterday for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just whenever.
And what do you do when you're out there?
I just stop on the corner sometimes and wait for people to come up to me. And sometimes I pull up to people. And since I'm by myself, I'll just do one-on-one. I don't do groups of people like that. They might approach me if I'm already out. They'll approach me, but I never drive up on more than one person for officer safety reasons. And you learn so much from people and most people, I think, respect the police. And most people I talk to, they don't have a specific incident where something happened to them. They'll talk about what happened to someone else. But perception, we have to pay attention to because that's real in some people's heads. So we just got to go out there. And I think one-on-one, you know, we want to make a difference. If you talk to most police officers out there, they didn't come for the income. They came for the outcome. They want to touch people. They want to be servants, and they're happy to be here for the most part.
Mm-hmm. And do people know who you are when you pull up?
Yes, most of the time they do. And sometimes, like I said, I'll just park someplace, and they'll come up to me.
Mm-hmm. And you just start talking.
Just start talking, asking questions, and just inquisitive, and they ask questions and just little things like that. The forums that we have, you know, the rally, the peace rally that we called. That's perfect timing for that. The open houses at the stations. We'll have some more forums. We're going to do a lot of things to invite people in, and we're going to do some things to go out. One thing I'd like to work on in the future is having police as substitute teachers. We had that program almost off the ground, and one of the school districts decided it wasn't in their best interest to do it for liability reasons and things. So if anybody's out there that has some authority at one of the school districts, we'd like to start a police as substitute teachers program, and that's something that I put in my strategic plan before I became chief.
And you want to do that why?
Because I think just like we had the forum a couple of weeks ago at Bob Mohart Center, when you can interact with kids one-on-one and they can say, well, we didn't really know you were like this because they've seen things on television. Most people don't have contact with us. And when most people have contact with us, it's not in a positive environment. So if we could actually go to the schools like when they had Officer Friendly when I was a young kid, it wasn't a controversial or threatening or adversarial relationship. It's like, oh, you're like us. And now we can come and they can see, you know, we have significant others. We have children. We have bills. We have connections to faith-based institutions. If they can see we're more alike than not alike, I think that'll break down some of the barriers also.
So how much trust exists today between the east side of this city and your department, Chief?
It depends on who you talk to. You can go on some blocks and they appreciate the police and they think you're doing a great job if you just recovered their stolen auto. And there's some other people that someone stole the television 10 years ago and the police officer, in their opinion, was rude and they have no use for the police. It all depends on who you talk to, but we have to change those negative perceptions. One person at a time, one contact at a time, and let people know, you know, humanize us a little more. Tell more stories on my blog about the police officers. Tell that police officers are reaching out and needing help. And again, we have the same issues as everyone else, and we have to not have that them versus us mentality. And when I speak of the community, I say the police and other segments of the community, because I think we start that dialogue with the police and them. Basically, the police and the community. But we're part of the community. So I try to stress that every time I get a chance to talk about it.
The chief is in the house. Daryl Forte, the police chief of Kansas City, Missouri. Your questions welcome. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to some calls. And Philip from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to compliment the chief. I've always said, even being an ACLU type, that the most difficult job in the world is policing a free society. Policemen in police states have it easy. They can just crack heads anytime they want. The job here is more difficult. And I just wanted to say it's particularly more difficult because we have so many guns, so many people with guns. I'll bet many people don't buy guns because they think they want to go kill somebody. They think they protect them. But one of the things which I bet we'd find on those domestic violence cases is people bought guns to protect themselves and their families, and it turned out terribly, tragically wrong.
Philip, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. And, Chief, the proliferation of guns has been a big issue on your plane. You've been down to Jeff City to talk to lawmakers, and you've had trouble making progress, at least on that front.
Yes.
How big a concern is all this for you?
I'm very concerned about that. You know, I'm all for having guns in a lawful sense. But, you know, so many times, and, you know, look at the number of homicides, there are people carrying firearms, whether mental issues or anger issues, that shouldn't have firearms. So I'm all for background investigations. I'm all for mandatory training if you buy a firearm, you know, because that's like giving somebody a driver's license that's never been behind the wheel of a car.
How much help are you expecting to get from the right honorables in Jefferson City these days when it comes to gun control kinds of issues?
I believe the ones from Kansas City and St. Louis, the bigger cities, they get it. But when you talk about the rural areas, and I remember when I was a kid, you see people riding around with the long guns in the back of the window of the truck. That's just a thing that happens there, and they don't have the same problems and issues that we have here in those small rural areas. So the politicians from the larger areas, I don't think we'll have a problem with it. Again, they're the minority.
If you want to join our conversation with the Chief of Police of Kansas City, Daryl Forte, 816-235-2888. Chief, the Obama administration just announced new limits on the types of military equipment that police departments can acquire from federal agencies. The list of banned equipment includes, get this, grenade launchers, tracked armored vehicles, armed aircraft, bayonets, and guns and ammunition of 50 caliber or higher. Is this the right move by the administration or not, in your view?
In my view, it's the right move for Kansas City because we have none of those things.
I was going to ask you, do you have grenade launchers?
No, we don't. Yeah. No, we don't. And I can't think of a reason anybody would have them. But again, I can't speak for other organizations. When you start talking about tank-like vehicles with tracks, you might need those in Alaska if you're moving around. It's a lot of snow, so I can't speak for everyone else. Mm-hmm. The only thing I had a question about is the camouflage-like clothing. I don't know what that would entail, you know, when you start talking about banning those things. And two, let everybody know that if a police agency wanted to purchase those things from a private seller, they can still do that. They just can't get these things from a federal source. So that they can still be acquired. And if they are, I would recommend to any police agency, make sure you have the appropriate training about the use of it and the deployment of it. That's more important probably than anything else, the use and the deployment. You can have those tools, but make sure you know when to deploy them if you do. But I can't, again, think of any reason we would have any of those things in Kansas City.
And this is a program that pretty much shares military equipment that's no longer in use, shares it with police departments around the country.
Yes.
And the KCMO department simply hasn't taken part in the program?
No, we don't see a need for a grenade launcher or tanks or anything like that, or any weapon 50 caliber or above, or any tank mounted weapons or anything like that. We don't have a need for it here.
You know, moving away from the whole idea of military equipment, are there equipment needs that you guys feel you need in this, you know, hyper dangerous society that we live in these days?
Absolutely. You need armored vehicles. And that's what, you know, if someone's captured and you need to go in and pull them out of a dangerous situation, you want to make sure you're protected. If you go into a house where you have somebody that's armed and barricaded versus having the officers walk up to the door, you might want an armored vehicle, and we do have them. But again, they're unlike military-type vehicles. They're, you know, you talk about our providers around town that carry currency. Some of the agencies, organizations or companies that carry currency, they're in armored vehicles. Those are not military-type vehicles, and we have smaller vehicles equivalent to those vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And do you need more of them? Is there equipment shortages in the department?
No, I think we're adequate right now for our equipment. I can't tell you the number because that's something we don't want to give out to the general public. But I think we have pretty good equipment now. We just added a RAM and a camera probably within the last couple of years where – four officers or five officers are not at a door trying to make entry. They actually have a RAM they can put on in front of one of these vehicles and push the door open or a window open or something like that, or break a window and things like that. So we want to make sure everybody's safe. And again, I'm not opposed to anybody having the equipment that they need, again, as long as they have the proper training.
Let's go back to some phone calls for Chief Daryl Forte. Let's go to Mark from Prairie Village on the Kansas side. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
I haven't had an opportunity to introduce myself, but I have two teenagers that spend a great deal of time on the Missouri side of state line at all the various venues. And while I was escorting them one day, I happened to come upon the chief as he was talking to a half a dozen teenagers, I guess I would say between the ages of, 14, 15, all the way up to 17 or 18.
Right.
And I waited for a moment. I was going to introduce myself, but I had a chance to listen to the chief talk to those kids just on a beautiful night in Kansas City. And I remember thinking to myself as I walked away, I am so glad this guy is our chief of police. Hmm. And I just wanted to share that comment, Chief. Whenever I've come in contact with you or I've been around you, I've always been really impressed. And it's a tough job, and kudos for all the hard work.
Thank you, sir.
Mark, what was the chief saying that caught your attention so much?
You know, there was it was right after there had been a little bit of upheaval down on the plaza for a couple of nights, and so I was escorting my then 15-year-old daughter down to the plaza to an event. I was her ride down there that evening, and I just decided that I was going to get out of the car and take 15 or 20 minutes and just walk around and get a feel for what was going on that night, just see what the vibe was. And the chief was there talking to a group of guys, and he just, was asking them what their plans were for the evening and what they were up to. And I think when I heard him make the comments, he was like, well, there's been some things going on down here, so you don't want to find yourself anywhere near any trouble that might be going on, because we are going to have, officers down here. I think it was his way of saying not only, it's like, I know you guys aren't causing any trouble, but at the same time, you want to try to be aware of your surroundings and make sure that that you don't get caught up in something that you don't want to be caught up in. Because one of the young men had made the comment to him about all the police patrolling and increased police patrols, and had talked about the fact that maybe they had had a friend that they thought had maybe been stopped or had been talked to by an officer, and they were questioning whether that was the right thing to do. And the chief was just saying, hey, if you're down here, if you're doing the right thing,
yeah,
you know, you don't have anything to worry about,
right?
You know, so it's really just on you, but you have to be aware of what all is going on around you at the same time. And I just thought it was great the way he was handling the conversation. And,
that's great.
And I really thought they were listening at the same time.
Mark, I've got to scoot on. I really appreciate your phone call. Let's go to John from Kansas City, Missouri. John, you're on Up to Date with Chief Daryl Forte.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chief Forte, I want to say something. I hope I don't come across the wrong way. But I really do appreciate the fact that you have had the experiences socially that have caused you to have the view as a police chief in a city that has a very large Black community. When I hear you speak, I sometimes feel like, and I see how they often require you to come before the public to talk about police issues, which oftentimes are really not that. They're really social issues. And I recognize that when I hear you speak, that even as a police chief, and I'm sure you've been an officer, you have a unique and an appreciated perspective when you speak about things. I don't hear you wanting to lock up everybody. I hear you wanting to change conditions that cause people to have encounters, negative encounters with police.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of things that are going on in this country. And really, everybody would benefit from having people. And I'm not trying to swell your head up. I've had some pretty rough.
Too late for that, John. Yeah.
Sir? Oh, well.
I'm just kidding.
I've had some rough experiences.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Black man. I live in this country. And there's some social dynamics that you just can't deny.
That's true.
But the bottom line is that I want you to know, I appreciate it. I hope you can convey to your officers the kinds of things that the mentality that you have. And, you know, maybe things will get better because of that. So,
John, I'm really glad you called. Thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Let's go to Michael from Ottawa. Michael, you're on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning.
I'm wondering if it would help in the service of demilitarizing and humanizing the police if there were more foot, equestrian, and bicycle patrols.
What about that, Chief?
We have all that now, and my thing, when you start making foot patrol units in the neighborhoods, you're telling the other officers that they don't have to get out of the cars. So again, everybody should be out of the cars talking to people on the porches. That's why we have hotspot policing, not just to reduce crime, but to give people that normally don't come out, meaning officers that are assigned inside, an opportunity to come out and mingle with people. And again, to humanize us as police officers. So we already do those things, but I'm not a proponent of having foot beat in certain neighborhoods because other neighborhoods don't want them. Anybody can get out of the car and become a foot beat officer at any given time.
Mm-hmm. All right, Michael, I hope that helps. Let's go to Christopher from Kansas City, Missouri. Christopher, welcome. You're on with Chief Daryl Forte.
Thank you, and thank you for the conversation. The last caller I couldn't quite hear, but may have just stolen my thunder, so to speak, but I just want to say that I'm a supporter of the police across the board, and I think they have an incredibly difficult job. But I, in my observation, I don't have an issue, but I kind of live in the center of town. In my observation, I see both kind of positive and a negative. I've interfaced a couple times with officers when I've called in about something, and in one particular instance, an officer called me back because I was concerned about some issues at Loose Park with teenage drinking, and the officer called me back, met me at the park, let me show the officer what the situation was, got out, walked around, really just good response and feeling like your voice is being heard. I've had another instance where they just didn't seem to want to get out of their cars. I called about ATV riding on streets and sidewalks in the area of town where I live, and had one car respond, drove by, didn't stop, kept going. Even though I was standing out there, another car came. I walked over to the car. The lady that was inside did not want to get out of that car, was not happy. So I've seen it both ways, but I guess my question is, maybe the last caller just touched on this, can officers get out of the car more often, come to a neighborhood, get out, walk around one day a week, meet people, talk to people? I see them drive by a lot when they're not don't have their lights on. There's two officers in the car. They're chatting, sitting someplace, looking at their phones.
Well, let me get a response here, Christopher, from the chief. Chief, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult when you talk about those situations without me knowing the details.
Yeah,
but I tell the officers, you know, you work 10-hour shifts. If you need to take a break after a hard call, go park somewhere and take a call, because we're human like everybody else. And that's when we get into trouble, when we're going back to back to call and you don't have time to de-stress. You might have just went on a call where, you know, a kid was injured, or you just settled a domestic violence dispute and things like that. So I tell them, you know, over and over. And I also tell them to get out of the cars, you know, when they can. But again, we don't have a place where we go take a lunch break other than Quick Trip, grab a drink, and get back in the car. But they're working 10 hours. They face with split-second decisions. So I encourage them, when they need to, debrief, de-stress, go someplace. It's okay to get away from everybody. So again, without the details, I can't really share that. But we're going to make sure our officers are okay. That's what I want to do.
And officers have that option, Chief, because the sense you have sometimes is that, you know, given the personnel shortages or the constraints there, that officers are constantly going from call to call to call because the demands are simply there for them to make those calls.
Absolutely. And that's when you make mistakes, when you don't have time to de-stress and think about what you got to do on the next call, because some officers make 20 plus calls doing their shift. And again, depending on the calls, yet sometimes you need to de-stress. And I'm telling all our commanders and our supervisors, make sure we're okay, because if we're not, they may give that kind of service, or perception of that kind of service. So we have to make sure we're okay. So it's okay to stop and take a 5-minute break, or go park somewhere where nobody's around, because we're human. And we hadn't talked about those things before, about making sure we're okay. And not just our law enforcement officers, but even our clerks at the station, even our CSI people, they deal in things nobody else deal with on a daily basis. So we're going to make sure they're okay.
What is the right number of calls to make during a 10-hour shift?
Everything you can. It's not about a quota or a go.
Yeah.
Just, and we, one of our strategic objectives is to provide excellent customer service. So instead of rushing in, trying to rush out, and nobody's gotten in trouble with discipline for not answering a lot of calls, just do the call that you're on, give it the best, and give it the best service that you can give.
A couple of final points. You know, it's summertime, obviously, and in where it's coming. In recent years, that sometimes meant problems with teenagers on the plaza. The curfew is back in force. Give us an update on what's happening on that front.
When you talk about the plaza, you know, up until probably the end of last year, most media outlets were still showing the footage from 2011 because there was nothing fresh to show.
Mm-hmm.
Now when you see the outlet, you see the guys, the three guys that destroyed the damaged property on the plaza, you know, a month or so ago. It's not a lot of problems on the plaza, but that's just what gets attention. And that's why I'm there most Fridays and Saturdays, at least for a little while, just so I can tweet about it and just so I can share there's not a big problem. The plaza is safe. The businesses are booming down there. The restaurants are full on Friday and Saturday night. The parking garages are full. I couldn't find a place last week. So the plaza is a safe place. It's just getting a bad rap sometimes.
And what about cooperation that your department's receiving with adhering to that curfew?
We haven't had a big problem. We haven't had a big problem. Even last year, it wasn't a big problem. We use that as a last resort. We'll transport kids home. We'll wait a couple hours in some cases for a parent to be contacted. We don't want to take the kids in. We don't want to inconvenience anybody. So we're just asking parents, just know where your kids are and help us with your kids.
Chief, a final point. Kansas City just made the list of the 10 most dangerous cities over 200,000 in population. That was based on 2013 crime numbers. Your reaction?
We don't look back at those kind of things. Again, if you look at the 2014 numbers, they're a lot better, and we'll probably be off the list. But we have to do what we can regardless of where we are on the list.
Okay. Chief, it's always good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
Thank you, sir.